I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Welcome to Sick Boy, a podcast where we talk about what it's like to be sick. This week's guest is Claire. She has depression. Let's talk about it.
All right, well, here we all are.
Here we are.
In the studio again with a guest in studio, feels so good. We're hanging out with Claire, who's been a long-time listener. So, Claire, first of all, thanks for supporting the podcast.
Yeah.
Claire is mentally ill.
Is this actually what we're here to talk about today?
Yeah, we actually are. Yeah. I mean, I'm joking.
No, I actually have cancer. No, I'm
okay. No, we've done
way
too many.
Funnier.
We've
way
done too
funnier.
Many cancer episodes recently. So
we were jokingly saying before the recording started about just like how some people talk about mental illness. And you jokingly said, I'm mentally ill, guys, when you walked in, and I thought it was really funny. But what's not funny is that Claire actually has anxiety and depression.
So we don't joke about that.
Don't laugh.
I'm not laughing.
Brian, I see you. Don't laugh. Claire, first of all, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for being
here. Thanks
for
having me.
Give us a little like sort of intro. Who is Claire? What's your life all about?
Oh, that's a big question. I'm Claire. I just finished my degree at Dal in marine biology and French.
Congratulations.
That's like right on the top of my mind.
And French or in French?
And French.
Oh, I was like, oh, they offer
a really weird
course.
Degree. I'm going to school to be a teacher in the fall, and I like didn't really know what I wanted to do, so I like super last minute decided that.
That's honestly that's the perfect thing though. Like when I was in grade 3, I wanted to be a marine biologist.
And have you seen the meme that's like, why did we all want to be marine biologists?
Did. Everyone did.
There was something about is really fucking cool.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Something about. I think too. We also grew up with Free Willy, which I think actually. Yep. Played a really big role in that. I'm serious about it. I think that really did.
I'm gonna say something bold and controversial. I wanted to be a marine biologist because I went to SeaWorld, which is really bad.
Yeah,
nowadays.
Whoa.
Listen. I don't like SeaWorld anymore.
Because I just feel like there's not enough. I mean, I'm with you, Claire. I hear you. There's not enough SeaWorlds.
Yeah.
We need more SeaWorlds.
Again,
but like that was
Claire's mentally ill, everyone. Just give her a break. Give her a break.
You know what's funny though is I actually also So same thing for me. And when I remember in grade 3, I went to SeaWorld and then I came back and wanted to be a marine biologist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I actually got 3 of my friends together in my grade 3 class and we charted out the driving directions in a world map book from Nova Scotia to Florida because we were like, as soon as we're old enough to drive cars, we're driving to SeaWorld and we're going to be marine biologists. Like, you didn't even have to go to, in my mind, you didn't even have to go to university. You just had to go to SeaWorld and then you became one.
And then somewhere along the way, Brian actually just realized that he wanted to be a part of the team that captures and enslaves the animals.
Yes. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Anyway. One of my professors actually does that. No, I'm kidding. That was a joke.
I was like, holy shit. For the name of science, I guess.
Sorry. I'm not just shitting on Dal. Anyway, my day-to-day life, I wake up, I'm anxious. I also have a dog. He makes me anxious, but also helps with my anxiety.
We're going to get into that. I'm excited to talk about that whole thing.
Yeah, he's a really, we were talking about him a bit earlier, but he's a, he's got his own mental health issues. And but he's like, he's really good. Like, I think if he wasn't as fucked in the head, he could be a therapy dog.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
But, yeah.
Is he kind of a therapy dog to you anyway?
Yeah, he is. He's really good. Like, I get panic attacks sometimes. And not as much anymore since I got him a couple years ago. Cause like he really hates it when I cry. Very stressful for him. Mm-hmm. So as soon as my breathing starts to change, he like hops up on my lap. Ooh. He like hits me, he'll like cuddle up, like lick me on the face and just like keep me grounded. But then if the panic attack starts and I actually start to like cry and like really freak out and like breathe really weird, he's like, I'm out. Yeah. This really sucks. Yeah. I'm going to go hide under the bed.
And then he starts having a panic.
He's like, you're past my threshold.
Yeah.
So I know that anxiety and depression are like kind of the two big things that we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah.
And this is not something that's like new to you.
No.
It's been something that's affected you for quite a while. Maybe take us back to like the early stages of your life and when you started to kind of when did you kind of start to notice like, oh, things are not quite the way that they used to be?
Yeah. If I like look back on my life and like think about like my mental health, like I think that I really started struggling when I was about 13. So I'm 22 now, I'm turning 23 this year. So it's been like 10 years of my life, like half of my life basically that I've struggled with mental health in some way. But I just remember like, I don't know, being 13 sucks for everybody. Mm-hmm. But I just remember like, I don't know, like feeling like hopeless. Like I was like a kid and I was like, man, I hate this being alive. Like, I don't know. It was like really tough. I would like skip school. I would like lie to my mom and be like, man, I got a really bad headache today, Mom. Stay home. And I was like a goody two shoes, like did really well in school. So she like was like, okay, like she's not like trying to skip out. So like if she's feeling sick, like I'll let her stay home. Like I believe her. But like it was because of like a different issue kind of that I was like lying to her, pretending to be sick so that I could get out of going to school. Cause I just like didn't have the energy to be there. Mm. Yeah. And then just like as high school went on, like things didn't get better. I kind of like kept everything like in to myself sort of. I think I like struggle a lot with like being a perfectionist. So that kind of like manifests in my anxiety quite a bit. Like I am like the oldest of three kids, like eldest daughter. It's kind of like a stereotype that they're like kind of like tightly wound and like, I don't know, like feel like they have to like do everything perfectly. And that's like definitely me. Like I would like wig if I like got like a bad grade or something, like full on panic attack, like crying in the shower. My life is over. I'm going to like perish and be homeless because I got a 42 on a math test or something like that. Like just not like rational thoughts.
And do you think that that this all stemmed from that experience of being the oldest?
No.
Were there certain things? Because like when I hear stories like this, I know quite a few people who at a very young age were like put in dance, ballet in particular. Or I mean, you could even relate this to like gymnastics as well. Mm-hmm. But like there's these sorts of things that like I think parents go, hey, we should put them into this thing because it's like good for their physical health and it's good for their body and it'll be good for their mind. When in reality, things like gymnastics and things like ballet, unfortunately, like really fuck kids up. And it fucks kids up in like the perfectionism standpoint. It fucks kids up in body image in really big ways. And it's just because of the culture of the sport or the culture of the art that has been like ingrained in that thing for centuries. And, you know, hopefully those things are changing as we evolve as people. But, you know, in looking back at your life, like, is there any kind of like, can you pinpoint like where the anxiety of life kind of stemmed from, or is it just too much to kind of really put your finger on?
That's like, it is a little bit much to put my finger on, but like, no, what you say about sports definitely like, I think that started popping up for me, probably even from a younger age than like 13. Like, I always, my parents were always like, you have to play a sport because you have to be physically active. Like, I don't know, that's good, whatever, parenting. They want me to like not sit around all day. They want me to like experience things. But they always, they put me in like, they put me in dance, and I am really bad at that. So that was not great for my self-esteem, that I was just like terrible at it. And I did it for years. And like all the girls around me were like so much better. And I just like couldn't get it. Like I can't, like my brain does not communicate with my body.
Sure.
In like a way that looks nice. Anyway.
What's so funny is I went to, there's a walk-in dance studio here called House of Eights. Mm-hmm. And I went to it a few times with my girlfriend, and she wasn't living here at the time. We like signed up for a 10 class pass or something. And she was with me the first three times, and you go in, and at the start of the class, they like, they'll you do a warm up, and then they teach you choreography. And by the end of the class, you dance to a segment of a song. And so after, I mean, I think I'm kind of cheap in some situations, and I got this 10 class pass and had these classes like to use. Yeah, and so I wanted to like make use of the classes that I paid for. So I started going without Maddie, and like the next session that I went to for the warm up, we had to line up in individual lines, and you
kiss walked, the person to your left.
You walked up to a mirror, and you had to freestyle dance at the start of class.
Oh my god.
And
oh my god, dude. Holy shit. Oh, that gives me, I don't mean to like use the word, but that actually gives me anxiety. Like,
I'm so anxious.
Oh my god.
I would leave. I would leave.
Yeah. No.
I went and
did you do it?
Yeah.
Oh.
And also the crazy part is that the people that go there are people who used to dance competitively growing up. It's their like fitness, sure, or like exercise, or whatever. And I mean, House of Eights is amazing. It's a super welcoming place.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Super inclusive. They made me feel so much at ease and at home there.
Yeah. But then when you did that dance, they were like, you got to go and you can't come back.
You know what's funny?
You got
to
go.
So you like walk up to the mirror, and it's like for like a count of like 10, you're like dance walking up to the mirror, and I'm just like on my own. And then you just have to freestyle dance.
And like, did you do like a magic mic type thing?
I don't
what
know.
Did, like, what did you?
I don't know.
Did
what
you wear
I did.
A flat brimmed hat that you flipped around?
I honestly, like, I blacked out at that moment. Like, I just like, I just let myself go.
That's
with the
amazing.
Music. But the interesting thing is like everybody like cheers in the moment because they know. I mean, it's no surprise that I don't know what I'm doing and that I'm just going and trying it anyway. And they were like cheering, and it was really, really, really nice. But holy fuck, what an experience of seeing other people who are so good at this thing, and like seemingly everybody's good at it.
Now as kids, you probably like, don't get that cheering part.
No.
Like it's not, you know, because kids suck sometimes, you know, like at a certain age, kids start to suck.
Yeah.
And they suck for like a few years.
They suck.
And then they get a little better.
They suck a lot for a while. But I was thinking like I've had like mild periodic anxiety and I'm always struggling with like chicken or the egg type of scenario. Like what is it? Did something happen that made me feel this way, or do I feel this way? And then I'm applying the way that I feel to like other stuff, and or like what's going on? And how does your anxiety manifest? Like in my experience of anxiety has always been like, it's like nothing. Well, I guess it is kind of in my head, but it feels very physical. It feels primarily physical, and it's actually not until I've been feeling it for at least a few days that I actually make the cognitive realization that I'm feeling anxiety, and that's what it is. For the first little bit, I feel like shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, definitely. Yeah. I get like really tight feeling in my chest, like it's physical. I have like a lot of like, I don't know, like mental things. Like I ruminate on things a lot. Like I'm just like constantly like thinking about the thing I'm anxious about. And I'll like, I don't know, like I'll go through like a scenario and then like worst case scenario it, and then just like repeat that over and over again with like, I don't know. Like I'm trying to like simulate every possible thing that can happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like I also feel like nauseous a lot. I mean, like, I'm also medicated, and that's one of the symptoms or the side effects of my medication. So, like, that doesn't help. But yeah, mostly like just like tightness and like pain in my chest. Like, and like the past like 3 or 4 years, my anxiety like started getting like really worse and like a lot worse. And like, I've noticed my like chest gets really tight sometimes, and like I can like pop my sternum, like the joint in my sternum. And I feel like it's related to my anxiety. I did some like WebMD doctor Googling, like this is not coming from my doctor. But like, I don't know what else it could be. Like, I don't know.
I mean,
like, it's like, just like
tension.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if we are anxious, if we are scared, if we are angry, like that, there is real physiological tension that builds up in your body.
Yeah.
You know, when you're stressed out, it's like, it's in your fucking neck and it's like your shoulders. And you know, when you're anxious, for a lot of people, it's like in your chest, it feels like it's in your sternum, in your heart.
Mm-hmm. And you just like start to hold yourself not conscious, like subconsciously, you just like, yes. You start to hold yourself in a different way. And if that is like,
continues that and compounds, then yeah, of course you're going to be like, popping, chest popping. Every time you get a break dance, pop, lock it, literally pop.
Oh, I wanted to ask about, like Jerry, you were talking about sports and how that can lead to, you know, people feeling anxious or this feeling of like perfectionism. I know for me, like I talk to my therapist a lot about perfectionism, and for me it comes from like really like, I think a lot of it's from a lack of like having parents show affection to one another. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, because, you know, you want to be loved by your parents and they're not modeling love in a proper way. And you try to do all of these things to like get them to like you, you know, like get them to like show you some sort of sense of approval. And my experience is like, it's definitely multifactorial, like comes from sports and, you know, lack of my parents being able to show that love to me. But I'm curious, like when you think back of in your past, like are there things that you're kind of like, oh fuck, that does seem a little bit weird. Maybe like, maybe that plays a part other than like sports and things like that.
I think it's just like not wanting people to be upset with me, kind of like, like I never wanted my parents to be mad at me, like ever. Like if they like yelled at me or like got like seemed like a little bit upset with me, like devastating. Like I would just like cry like instantly. Same with my teachers, like any form of like disapproval just like absolutely wrecked me as a kid. Still does, but I can like hide it a little bit better. And like once I was like done with dance and stuff, like back to the sports thing, I played hockey for like 7 years, and that was absolutely not the environment for me. I like did so bad with team sports because I was so worried all the time that I was letting my team down. I was letting my coach down. I was like worried that everyone on the team didn't like me. Like, so I think like probably I just had like a few bad experiences with like, I don't know, maybe like people like getting upset with me over stuff. And then it just like, I never wanted it to happen again. So I was like constantly like ruminating on it.
Yeah.
Was this in the conversation we were having yesterday with Owen? Maybe I think it must've been, and I in no way, shape or form, I'm like trying to introduce like the question of another thing that you are dealing with. And also the fact that who fucking knows, like the interplay of the brain anyway. And if like, so if you call this depression, you call this anxiety and you call this OCD, like what are the fucking lines between those things anyway?
Yeah. We could try to diagnose it.
but something that a psychiatrist told us in a conversation that we recorded yesterday was that anxiety and OCD, like they're very much like meshed together, and often like because OCD, you get a thought and then you loop the thought, and you like replay that over and over again, and then anxiety sort of manifests from this loop. Has that ever been a conversation that you've ever had with somebody about OCD, and how that might fit or anything?
No, my therapist, she wasn't like a psychologist, so she couldn't diagnose me with anything, but she would say, like in our session, she would go, that sounds like an OCD thought pattern, which like gave me kind of the idea. And then when I like spoke to my doctor about like getting on like medication and like steps I could take, because I was like, in like a very, very dark place. She prescribed me a medication. I'm on Zoloft, and Zoloft treats depression, anxiety, and OCD all at once. So like, I don't really know what the mess and mingle of it is. I know there's an anxiety disorder floating around in there, and there's depression floating around in the skulls.
It's so fascinating when you think about all of these things that we've put these names on, and because we put a name to them, we sort of think that we have this these goalposts between which these things live. It's really not. It's so much more blurry than that. And this isn't a thing that's possible yet, but I was listening to a podcast with somebody who was talking about research that he's working on, which is trying to find biomarkers in blood work that are an indicator that can basically at some point in the future, diagnose mental illness. Mm. So instead of having this very subjective, I think it's this or I think it's that.
Yeah.
More like you could go, you've got
it says it right here.
Jared, says, you've got cystic fibrosis. Yeah. It's not ambiguous. Yeah. We don't think you might have something else. There's no blurry lines. It's that's what you got.
You have a genetic mutation. That genetic mutation literally means cystic fibrosis.
And it's like this guy's life work is trying to figure out how we can find an actual biomarker that says this is what you're dealing with.
It is interesting though, because I feel like I'm way too dumb to know about this thing, but maybe I'm curious about how society impacts our experiences as people too. Like when, Owen was talking yesterday about school, the way that the school system is developed to make you focus on learning things in a very specific way and being punished in a certain way, and what that teaches you and the way that makes you think. And we classify ADHD as a disorder because that way of thinking doesn't work for the system that we've created. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that's only a disorder because the system is the way that it is. And so it makes me wonder how many things do we call mental illnesses that are actually just an experience that just doesn't work as well, or is a bit of a deficit because of the way that society is designed, not the other way around. It's kind of more like accessibility.
I know that you guys don't really like when I talk about money, but Warren Buffett...
I thought you were going to talk about Peter Thiel, so...
No, I'm not. But Warren Buffett has this really interesting thing where he's where when he talks about philanthropy and making sure that companies and himself are giving back, he makes billions and billions of dollars. Runs one of the biggest companies in the world. He talks about philanthropy a lot. And he's like, I just have a brain that's really good at playing the game that we've set up in this world, that the world is playing. There's lots of people who can't play this game very well because of whatever reason. And if I was born in a different era and the game was different, then I'd be a bad player because my skill set is in this. And so he kind of talks about from the other perspective of going, I just so happen to be able to play this game well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's helping Claire. You sitting here telling us she's bad at the game.
Can we just I'm saying it from the other perspective of going, hey, he's saying we need to accommodate. We've set up this fucking thing, and we need to recognize that just because people are varying degrees of good at playing the game that we've said is the game. Mm-hmm. We need to know about that. We need to accommodate.
I mean, we have these classifiers like neurotypical or neurodivergent, but it's really neurotypical for the way the game is designed right now, and neurodivergent in the way that the game is designed right now. But if it was a different design game, then
the roles would be reversed.
I think of it, not to stay on this for too much longer, but I because I'm a creative person, I think of, when I think of a spectrum, I think of the color wheel. And I was using this to describe my experience to Maddie the other day, because I feel like on the color wheel, if ADHD was red, I feel like I'm very red. Like I have a lot of red in me. But also ADHD is on my color wheel is next to autism. Like they're sort of similar. There's things that are similar, but they're very different in some ways too. But they're on a color wheel in terms of experiences. I could imagine that ADHD is red and autism is yellow. And I imagine that I have a tiny, tiny bit of yellow in me. I wouldn't say that I'm autistic, but like there are things with the autism experience that I relate to in a small way. And like, you know, people might hear that and go, no, you're not. Like, no, that's not true. But if you think of it as a spectrum, like, wouldn't it be possible that I have, you know, 10% of yellow in me? And couldn't I have some of those similar traits? Like, one of the things that I saw for autism is a guy was explaining his experience and it was like, I don't need to be right. I need to be correct in a situation, because if you're not correct, you ruminate. And so he was like, it really hurts my brain when I'm not being understood in a way that makes me correct. He's like, I want to be correct. And if I'm not correct, I want to be corrected. I don't want to be told that I'm wrong, because then I can't find out what the real answer is, which then makes me snowball into this like bout of anxiety, and I start to stress over it. And I'm like, holy fuck, that's really me. I don't think I'm autistic, but in that situation, I'm like, I can see part of that in my experience, which makes me think of the color wheel and think, oh, I got some yellow in me. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Yeah.
More or less.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I'm trying to explain the experience of like, yeah. You guys know what
so
I'm saying.
I hear you. So in your specific experience, Claire, if you,
what color are you? How much red do you have in you?
No. Going back to what like Taylor was saying about how like Warren Buffett's brain is like designed for the game or whatever. Like, I don't know. When I'm trying to explain like how I'm not well to people who like don't like get it, like don't have mental illness. Like, I don't know. The thought that comes to mind to explain it is that I'm like treading water and it's really, really hard. Like I'm drowning, like just living life. I'm treading water. When I'm really struggling, I'm like almost drowning. Like there's water coming into my lungs. I'm really struggling. But like all the time I'm treading water. Sometimes I'm doing really good at it, but there's always like, I don't know. There's always effort to like, like I'm never at ease. Like it's always hard.
Mm. Do you ever feel moments? Pardon? Like, is there ever moments that give you like a glimpse into what you would like to experience, quote unquote? Do you know what I mean? Like when you say you're treading water,
like, do you ever feel like you're not treading water?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like that moment when you like see a sunrise or a sunset, maybe I'm using this as an example because it's common experience, mm-hmm. and like time disappears and you, maybe in hindsight, you realize like, holy fuck, I think that was enlightenment for a split second. And you're like, oh wow, that's really profound. Mm-hmm. Is there anything like that in terms of feeling like you're not in that constant, that gives you like a direction that you want to go towards, you'd like to work towards or try to get
to,
I guess?
No, I try to find those moments. Like, I really like to like hike and like spend time in nature. And like, I really like photography. So like, I'll like take my dog and like, we'll go on like a nice long hike and I'll just like spend like 2 hours just like taking pictures of moss and like having a good old time. It's an interesting hobby, but like, I don't know. Like, I just like, I'm focusing on something that's like unrelated to my life. And like, I don't know, like, I think if I like switch back and think back to like everything that I have going on, like I get really overwhelmed, but like, there's definitely like moments of escape. Like moments of like clarity and like some things I do.
Do you ever listen to Sam Harris?
No.
Man, you should listen to Sam Harris. He talks about presence and that like whether you're anxiety is going to just like amplify this feeling for if you're dealing with anxiety, but kind of that everybody kind of lives on this spectrum of suffering that is brought on by the past that we want to change or the future that we are concerned about making the wrong decision about like how we move forward in the future and time. And he talks about the present moment in this really understandable, relatable way that at least helps, at least for me, crystallizes the way that we, like when you talk about being in the woods and looking at moss, that like, that's just like where you are. That's what you're doing. And that is your past, present, and future, like all kind of rolled into one. And
you could live in the woods and just look at moss all the time and you'd be fine.
I would be totally happy. Yeah. No, I took a class like the past semester about like science communication, like communicating science, and we had to like write a blog post about something. So I wrote it about like the relationship between like a gratitude, like present moment kind of practice and like like spending time in nature and kind of like the science behind that. And like, I have like a background in biology. So I'm like, I'm really like fascinated by like living things. So like, I don't know. I was talking about like how I would like take my like walks in the woods, and that would be like, I'm like, I would use it as like a gratitude practice. Like, I'm so grateful for being here. Ooh. Isn't it? Like, I like tell myself like, wow, it's so wonderful. Look at how complex everything is. Like, I can look at like a rock with like five different species of moss on it, and I'm like, wow, there's a whole ecosystem down there. Like, mm-hmm. isn't the world like cool? And then like, I feel like grounded. I feel grateful mm-hmm. to be here. And that's something that really helps me kind of deal with my anxiety, kind of keeps me like, I don't know, kind of adds a little bit of positivity to it. And there's like actual like science behind
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Like spending time in nature is like correlated with like better human health, green spaces, things like that, gratitude practices.
Yeah. I think it was last year maybe that like doctors in BC could start prescribing passes to national parks. And it was right. like, you know, it was like, oh, you get a, we're going to get you a pass to a national park to get you outside. Mm. I mean, it, you know, the science is there.
Are you tired of hearing the same old wellness advice? It's time to dig deeper and listen to America Dissected from Crooked Media, the podcast that's cutting into the science, culture, and policy that shapes our health. From doctors fighting for their rights to the surprising truths about sunscreen, America Dissected dives deep into the state of health. Tune in every Tuesday for new episodes of America Dissected, available on all major podcast platforms.
Going back to like what your early stages of kind of navigating this when you were younger mm-hmm. and you were like, say, you know, in high school, do you recall ever trying to stimulate conversation with anybody around you to be like, hey, I am struggling, or, you know, like what kind of supports did you either go to or have available to you when you were young?
Yeah. In high school, I think like the first time I ever told someone I needed help was my best friend at the time. And I was like sleeping over at their house, and we were like lying in their bed, just like chatting. And then like, I just like started like bawling. And then I like totally like opened up to them about everything. And then like, we were both like 16 years old. Like, and then they were kind of just like, I think you probably should talk to someone about that. Mm. And then like, I don't think I did. But like the teachers in my school, like definitely noticed that something was like wrong with me. I had like really poor emotional regulation because I was just like so flooded. Like I wanted to die. Like I was like I was just not there. Like, like everything was like, I don't know. Like I was like perfectionist. Like I needed to do this or I was going to like die. But I don't know. Like I'm just trying to think back to like my thought patterns. Like it's not rational. Obviously it's mental illness, but like, yeah, I was just like very hopeless, like no emotional regulation. I was like crying all the time. Cause I just like, there was just like, I felt empty. And like, I would just cry in class, just like straight up. I would just like start bawling and then I would have to leave. So like, I feel like more of my teachers should have said something. Cause like I was sitting there crying.
Yeah. Do you like, think like, do you think like, do you think, I mean, I guess it's hard to say. Cause like, you don't know what anyone was thinking, but like, did you get the sense or the feeling that people just saw you as, you know, there's Claire, fucking crying Claire, you know, like emotional Claire again.
I think so. Mm. Yeah. I'm like always been like a very sensitive person. So I think that's probably just what they thought. Mm-hmm. But like I had a couple of teachers that like took steps to like get me help. I had one teacher. He was like an angel. He's one of those people that you have. And he like, I don't know, one of those teachers, you know, like he cares about every kid that like walks in the door. And like one time he looked at me and he goes, how you doing, Claire? And I was like, oh, I'm good. And then he's like, he goes, how are you really doing? And I was like, not so good. And I kind of opened up to him a little bit. And then I had one teacher who called the guidance counselor on me and then like ambush sent me down.
Intervention style.
Intervention style. I got like called down to like the guidance office. And then like, she was like, one of your teachers is like, notice that you're struggling. And then I like kind of opened up to her about what I was feeling. But I was like, I was really ashamed that I was feeling like that. Mm-hmm. I was really ashamed that I was like experiencing like suicidal ideation. So I didn't really tell anybody.
Like even in those moments,
I was like, I'm depressed. And they're like, do you ever have thoughts about wanting to kill yourself? And I go, nope. I don't, which is my own fault, I think, for like keeping it down. But I just think it's just because there's like such a culture of shame around mental illness. Totally. Like I didn't want to be sent to a hospital. I didn't know what was going to happen. I was like, I was scared. So like, even like when I went, my mom like took me to the doctor. She didn't really know what to do. Like, cause like the guidance counselor obviously called her and was like, hey, mm-hmm. like your kid's like really struggling. So she like made an appointment with my like my family doctor, and she was basically like, you should take an iron supplement and
the doctor.
Try meditating.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So that was really cool. I probably should have been going to therapy since I was like young, but sure. like that's what happened. And then I just dealt for like the next right. 4 years.
Fuck, I didn't know it was so easy to cure it with just an iron supplement and meditation.
What was your parents' reaction to getting that call? Were they like, yeah, we're aware, or was it like
complete
shock?
My mom was shocked. My dad never said anything to me about it. I don't even think she told him, to be completely honest, because mm-hmm. like I've opened up to him in the past couple of years about like my mental health struggles, and like I think it was like a hard conversation. It seemed like new information to him,
right?
So like I think my mom just like kind of like kept it to herself, and she was like shocked. She had like no idea that it was like going on. But like I don't know, like I don't think we like spent too much time together when I was a teenager. Like I don't know. We'd like eat dinner. She'd drive me to school, and then I would go hide in my room.
Yeah, and again, like you're doing everything in your power to like
I was hiding
mask
it.
Everything, yeah. right? Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I think it's also very hard for parents, especially. How old are you?
22.
22.
So we're not quite in the same generation, but we're not super separated. Yeah. You know, I think it's also very challenging for parents. I think we are of a different generation where mental health is just like, there's just a difference. There's a big difference in terms of understanding it, talking about it, accepting it, and not making it the taboo that it was for our parents. And I can see it. I can see a parent feeling very responsible.
Yeah.
If you say you are feeling a certain way, then I would imagine it'd be very easy to go, that's my fault. Like, you feel that way because me.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's what my mom was going through. Like, I don't know, we're very similar people. So I think she probably blamed all that information, like, on herself and mm-hmm. was like, what did I do wrong? Like, this is all my fault. And that was probably very hard for her.
Mm. And why wouldn't she, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, I probably would too. Like you know, like,
and the issue is that
you probably would too, if you know, at a point where Zaya like comes to you and says it would be so hard for a parent not to go totally. Fuck, like what? Because when we look at parenting, I mean, I don't know. I look at parenting right now and I go, there's no way you can't fuck your kids up. Like it just seems also, it's inevitable. You're gonna fuck them up somehow.
But it's
and so when it comes back on you and even if it wasn't you, of course it's gonna be this easy thing mm-hmm. to go, fuck, I knew I should have done this or maybe like I fucking had a feeling that this might, you know.
The feeling that it's your fault. And I think you're right. I think there will be, I think there would inevitably be feelings of that, yeah. big or small. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think in older generations, it's probably bigger because the understanding of mental health is less than what we have now.
Interesting. So I also wonder if in the past generations, if it was there. Just like, nah, it's just, you know, yeah. that, I mean, this is like maybe even a further generation back where it's like, I don't know. You know, your brain just gets wonky, you know?
But honestly,
sometimes we get wonky.
It's also okay for parents to feel like part of it is their fault, because oftentimes it is their fault. And that's okay, because like we grow up with the idea that our parents are perfect. Like we're born into this world and look at our parents initially. Like I think most kids think, oh, my parents can do no wrong. They're the perfect people. And so oftentimes as kids, when our parents have done something to us that we can like look at and go, hey, you made the wrong decision there and it had a negative effect on me. Most of the time we blame ourselves and don't like let them shoulder some of that responsibility. And so I think it's okay for parents to blame themselves in some situations, because I think it is partly their responsibility, and we should be okay with that more. And not to say that they're a bad parent because they did that, but it's like it's that and instead of but. It's like, you're a great parent and you let me down in that situation and it fucked me up a little bit and that's okay. I still love you. And you made a mistake, I guess.
Yeah.
I think where my train of thought was going on that is that if a parent internalizes it as all their fault.
Yeah.
And there might be a lack of understanding about mental health. Then that can create a negative loop cycle where it's like they're not dealing with that and there's no communication with you, which then in turn makes it harder for you to process everything that you're going through.
Which then can also lead to like a lack of actually finding that's, support.
That's the true generational gap though, is that like our parents don't acknowledge their own mental health and therefore because they don't, they will then maybe say, this is all my fault and then beat themselves up over it, which then creates that negative loop that you're talking about. But if they actually just manage their own feelings and we manage our own feelings better, and we're not healthier.
And I'm not saying that this is your parents, just like talking generally.
Brian is. Taylor's not Brian.
I want to be very clear, but I'm not, none of us are trying to shrink you. But like the reason why I'm saying all these things is because it's super personal for me because I think of my experience. I'm not projecting on, I don't mean to be projecting on you if it seems that way, but I like, as soon as we talk about this stuff, it hits really close to home for me. So I'm like sharing my thoughts because if somebody is listening to this and feels the same way, I hope that they can feel less alone in that.
No, I totally get that. I feel like the feedback loop kind of thing that Taylor was saying was like definitely a thing where it was like, I don't want to stress my mom out because being mentally ill obviously is hard for her, so we just don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know, I think I kind of, I don't even know how long ago it was, 3 or 4 years ago, it was 2019, I started like seeing a therapist because I was like, okay, like I am not well, like I'm like, I don't know, like hurting myself, like hurting my relationships because I'm like so anxious, like I like need to do something about it. So I like, I started doing like a talk therapy, like online, like even like before COVID, just cause like I'm from Ontario. I go to school out here. Like it was just easier to like find someone that I could consistently see throughout the year. And like, I started doing that. I had to like cycle through like a couple therapists cause one of them was really messed.
one of them was really mentally ill.
A tale as old as time. I don't know if we've ever met somebody who's done therapy that hasn't been like,
this guy told me to get a nose job basically. Yeah. He was like, it was messed. He was walking me through all, I'm going to go through all the things he said because it was crazy. This is my favorite thing.
Fuck yeah, let's go.
He goes, okay, so can you make it a top 10
so we can post on TikTok?
He goes, you need to turn your Wi-Fi off at night because your router is making you anxious. The waves coming off of your router.
Oh, no.
Wow, you are one of those guys. You already fucking made this as bad as it could be. Holy shit, what else?
And I went, I live with roommates. That's not going to happen. Yeah. Not like being like, I'm not fucking doing that, guy.
He's like, you don't charge your cell phone with a charging pad, do you?
He was a yoga instructor, but he was not to shit on you guys, but he was like trying to I don't even know what he was like trying to teach me. He was like, this is my breathing technique I learned in India. And I was like, I actually can't do that because I have a deviated septum. So like, I can't breathe through one of my nostrils. So like, is there something I can do that's like not based off of breathing through my nose? And he goes, no, you know, my wife had a deviated septum and like she got that fixed and that actually really helped her. It opened up her airways and like she can breathe better and she feels better now.
Yeah.
And I was like,
anecdotes.
I was like, okay.
Wow, he was like,
you should really get that fixed. Like it's covered by OHIP, whatever. Like he was like, just telling me like, I really need to fix my deviated septum. Not a nose job actually, but like get nose surgery.
That is rhinoplasty.
Yeah. Go get nose surgery so you can do my breathing techniques and turn off your router and you'll feel better.
I'll be the first to say and the first to admit that there are plenty of people in the yoga world out there that just don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you speak to anyone who thinks that the waves coming off your router are going to fuck your shit up. That's my red flag to go, I am out of here.
That's the reddest flag.
We had one session.
Yeah.
That was it.
I was scared of therapy for a little while, but
I tried again and it was better.
And after the, Was the second time better?
The second time was a lot better. She helped me through like a lot of like family issues that I was going through, helped me like develop some like coping strategies kind of to deal with that. And like it helped significantly. Yeah.
I would love to talk about like the story behind the time that you decided to get like seek medical intervention. Yeah. Because I think it's a really interesting story, and also kind of, you know, I think for anybody who's listening to this, like it's an important story to hear. Mm-hmm. So yeah, can you kind of like walk us through that?
Yeah. So, it was like, it started. I'm going to start with like my dog, cause he's very central to this story. Yeah. So I got a puppy, I got a COVID puppy, November of 2020. Probably not like the best decision I've ever made. But I love him and he's here. So anyway, we're going to start with that. So I was living in Ontario with my parents. Then I got a dog. And then 2 months later, I got like a co-op job, out here working at the science center. So I had to like go out and move by myself. So I was living alone with my dog, like whatever was fine. He was a puppy. We were chilling. I wasn't doing bad. I wasn't doing great, but like, I don't know, I was having like some like relationship anxiety stuff with my partner. But like nothing too terrible. And then that like job ended, and then my like sublease ended. So I moved in with my partner and a roommate. And we moved into this new house, and like the walls were like really thin, and it was a new environment for my dog, who's like, I was like telling you guys about it, he's like a really anxious little herding dog. So like he was like barking at like footsteps above, like everything, just like adjusting to the move. Like, I don't know, normal dog stuff, like dogs bark at things. But I managed to get it in my head that I was going to get evicted because the dog was barking so much. Ooh. He wasn't. He would bark like one time if someone dropped something, and it would happen like a few times a day. Right. So like nothing, like he's not disrupting anyone's day. He's not sitting there barking for like half an hour straight. So like it's nothing that like anyone's going to like complain to the landlord about. But I like got it in my head that like that's what was going to happen. And I just like was ruminating on it. Like I'd like kind of like what you're saying, either like I was like looping kind of on that stuff. I was like counting the times in a day that my dog would bark, like things like that. I was like, okay, like they're not gonna complain about me if he only barks 5 times a day. And like I was doing that, and it was just like all I could think about. And then so like my life, I was just constantly anxious. Like there was like 4 months straight of just like heightened anxiety, like tight in my chest the whole entire time.
Oh my God.
Like it was just, it was painful. Like it was like, I was like suffering. And yeah. And then like my dog, like he started having like more behavioral issues, probably like, partially he was like anxious because I was anxious so much. So 100%. Like, and he's a herding dog. So it's like normal for him to like be reactive to certain things out on walks. So he started like, and also like, he started getting nervous because like a lot of people would like pet him without my permission, and he was nervous, and like I wasn't like sticking up for him as much as I should have been. So he started getting nervous of like strangers and things. So then like that led into like us not being able to have guests over, or we'd have to do like a really long introduction to the dog because he would be so nervous and like barky. And then I would be like, oh, if he's barking at the people that are coming over, then someone's going to complain about me. So it was just like this anxious loop for like 4 months. And then like, so that was like started in like May, and then by September I just like crashed. Like I was anxious for like 4 months. Those 4 months should have been like the best 4 months of my life as well, because I was doing like my Dal marine biology summer courses. So I went like shark tagging. I was like out for like 2 weeks, like just like at the beach all day, like just like sampling stuff, like going like snorkeling. Like that should have been amazing. But all I was thinking about was like my anxious ruminations, and like it like ruined my summer. And then I was so tired by the end of it that like come the fall I was just so depressed. Like I would be like driving down the highway, and I would be like, I would see like a big rock, and I would be like, I could turn my car into this rock right now, and that would fix things. I'd feel better. Like just like, I don't know, like really dark shit. And then I was like, okay, this is not good. I would like I finally like opened up to my partner about it. Like he knew that I was struggling, but like not to the degree. And he was like, okay, like here's what we're going to do. Like you need help. You're going to start seeing like your counselor again. Cause I would like kind of like be on and off with my counselor. So I started, and she was like, okay, like, this is a lot. Like, you're going to need to, like, see a doctor. Like, she's like, I think you need, like, some sort of medical intervention. Like, this is kind of, like, beyond the scope of what I can help you with. So I, like went to the doctor through the university, and, like, I at first had a bad experience with one of the doctors. I, like, really don't like her. I refuse to see her. She, like, basically, I was like, I'm feeling, like, really anxious. I think I, like, need... I don't know. And she goes, okay, what med? I'm going to put you on this med. Like, 5 minutes, like, a 2 minute conversation. And I was like,
that's
okay.
Wild.
I'm like, I don't, you didn't hear anything about my life. Like, you just want to put me on, like, medication. I was like, I get you're trying to, like, get in, get out, like, you're busy. But, like, so I didn't at that point.
Fucked.
And
yeah.
Then it, like, took me, like, a while again to, like, go back. I saw a different doctor who had a whole 20 minute phone call. She, like, I went through, like, the whole spiel, like, I just gave you guys now, but, like, even more in depth, like, all my, like, symptoms, everything. And then, like, at the end of that, she was like, okay, this is what I'm going to recommend. We can try this, like, a low dose. And then, like, it
makes way more sense
yeah,
to, like,
which
go
makes,
to that.
Yeah,
yeah, right. Yeah.
So, yeah. Like, and then we, like, would check in every once in a while with, like, how my meds went. And, like, I kept seeing my, like, counselor, and it, like, it helped me, like, I don't know. Helped me, like, climb out of the hole I had, yeah, like, dug myself into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so, like, it is the part of that story that I find so interesting is, like, this thing that is currently laying on this table in front of us, this dog.
Taylor.
Dog.
What?
Wake up. Dog. This dog that's laying in front of us here, Donut, like, he, in my world, like, he is such a relief, mm-hmm, and he brings me so much joy, and yet also can bring me so much stress.
Yeah.
And you talk about your dog, and it's like, you have this dog that's like not a therapy dog, but to you it offers you so much therapy,
mm-hmm,
but it also was the thing
yeah,
that was at the root cause of, like, putting you into this place where you had to seek medical intervention.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so fascinating that, you know, I mean, it just makes me think about how, like, interesting mental health can be. Like, these, mm-hmm, these things that have such a grand effect on your life that when you look back at now, you can, yeah, literally look at it and go, ugh, there was nothing. There was, yeah, nothing to be worried about. Like, there were, you know, the dog wasn't a nuisance. The dog wasn't actually a problem. It was,
no,
just all this thing that was, like, driving me to madness.
I mean, that's the, yeah, thing about mental health is rationality,
mm-hmm,
ceases to
exist,
to be,
yeah,
of any use.
Yeah.
And, like, that's, yeah, the most frustrating part of it. Like, I am the most pragmatic, rational person. And whenever I feel that sensation of anxiety in my chest, which admittedly is very rare,
mm-hmm,
but felt, I'm like, immediately I go, why? I need to know why. And I think about it. And I always come to the conclusion. Well, I guess maybe rationality does play a role there. Cause I go, there's no rational answer for this. Like, my rationale is that there's no rationale.
Mm-hmm.
That's, and because you don't have a mental
and then
illness.
I know.
You don't have generalizing.
And then what happens is I go, I guess I'll wait till this is fucking over, you know, because I can't, because there's nothing to do. I can't,
because, yeah, it's still there. You haven't fixed it.
I've come to, yeah, the rationale that, yeah, I can't do anything,
yeah,
about it.
Yeah.
Like, it's unfixable.
I wanted to ask Claire, like, during that time, you've mentioned your partner a few times,
yeah,
but I'm curious, like, what the, because, like, 4 months is not a short period of time.
No.
And obviously I, the way that you paint the picture, I can imagine that it's not unobvious that you're going, mm-hmm, you're going through something during that time. So what was the conversation like with your partner through that? Like, did you talk about it a lot, or is this a more obvious thing in hindsight?
We talked about it a little bit. Like, I don't think I ever let him in onto, like, how, like, badly it was truly affecting me, but I would, like, bring it up a lot. Like, I would kind of, like, use him to, like, soothe my anxiety in a way. I'd be like, oh, like, this is fine, like, he's not barking that much, and he'd be like, yeah, it's okay. And then, like, one of the things, like Jir said, is, like, driving me to madness, it, like, actually was. Ooh. I, like, one of my anxiety symptoms is, like, I'll have, like, I don't know if they're like dreams or like hallucinations. I don't know. I haven't actually spoke to my doctor about this, but I know it like actually like happens when I'm really anxious. So I like would start to hear him, like I would wake up from a sleep because I would hear him bark. He didn't bark. My partner was lying in bed next to me. He didn't wake up. Like, and like the dog was sleeping. I would go like check out, look in his like little, his like crate, and he'd be asleep. So I like was just like so worried about it. And then I'd like wake him up and be like, did you hear him? Did you hear him bark? And he'd be like, no. Like, go back to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he obviously, he, like, knew something was going on. And then, like, he's, I think, just, like, based off of, like, how I was acting. Like, I think I wasn't, like, fully self-aware of it until, like, much later on, too.
Yeah.
Like, just how bad it was getting. Mm. Like if, a couple of times he was like, hey, like, maybe you want to go back and see your therapist again.
Mm-hmm. What has that been like? Like, how has your relationship evolved as, you know, you've sort of learned about your experience? And I think, too, in, like, in the frame of like being a perfectionist and not wanting, like kind of wanting to hide some of that from your partner so that you don't feel like a burden on them too. Like how has that sort of shifted through the course of your relationship?
Ooh, yeah.
Or has it?
It definitely has. I think part of it is like when I would get anxious, like very early on in our relationship, and I would like seek him out to sort of like help calm me down or like just to like lend an ear. He would like, it would get me like really frustrated and make things worse because he would always try to fix the problem.
Ooh.
Which like sounds dumb because he was like offering me solutions, but it's not what I needed in the moment. I needed him just to listen to me. Mm-hmm. So we had to like work through that. Like it took us a really long time to work through like, okay, if I am having a hard time, I need you just to sit there and be there and just go, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And like, that's something that like has had to evolve. Ooh. Like as we've,
it's
as
such
we've
a classic.
Together. Yeah.
It's such a classic.
I
mean,
I still do that where I still got to go fucking dude, trying to fix it all the time.
I think that's really interesting too. I found that one of the most helpful things for me in therapy has been, I think like oftentimes before when I had things in my life that would cause me stress that I didn't know why they were causing me stress. And like that would lead to conflict in my relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand the root of it. I didn't understand what I really needed from my partner.
Yeah.
And like, as I start to like dissect some of those, you know, some of the conflict that like Maddie and I have had, I start to understand like where that has come from. And then I understand for future situations like what I actually need. And like that point that you made of like, you know, your partner wanting to fix something when really you just need to like somebody to listen to you and be an ear. I mean, I think that's probably true for a lot of people in the sense that like, you know, they go to their partner with they need one thing. The person's trying to be helpful, but it's not helpful. And then that just leads to like further conflict. But also it's really hard to like communicate what you need when you don't know what that is too. So it's an interesting challenge, I think, in relationships.
How is your, you mentioned it earlier and you mentioned sleep and that you would wake up and sort of be worrying about the your dog. How was your sleep like broadly during that time? Or even generally like in your, like how well do you sleep? Because sleep is just such a,
it's so
much more important than the average person knows about. And it can have such a effect on the way that we are.
Right now, I sleep well. I don't know. I've got this Fitbit that like tracks my sleep and stuff.
Yeah.
And like, I try to like get like a good amount of sleep. Like for me, every night it's like around like 8 hours is like my like benchmark. Like if I get less, like it messes me up. But I was getting like 6 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
I would like, I think I like, it took me a really long time to like settle and like calm down and like stop moving at night. And then like when I would get into bed, like I would be like thinking a lot. So like, I think my like anxiety would like affect my sleep, which would like affect my anxiety. And then it would just like, just be a big old mess. But in times of stress and like in times of like anxiety and stuff, I definitely sleep a lot.
When you got on the medication, after that second time with the doctor, what was the, you know, how did things start to feel after you started medication?
At first, it was terrible. Like, the side effects of that medication hit me so hard. And, like, I had to, like, push through it. One of the side effects is, like, brain fog. And I felt like a zombie. Mm. Like, I was just walking around. Like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, I was just not present. Like I wasn't thinking properly. Like I was just like so much slower to react and things like that. And that was like a month. I also had like morning sickness from the medication, basically. Like every morning I would be super nauseous as like my body was like adjusting to the dose. So that was really hard at first, but like I stuck with it because like a lot of mental health medications take like a couple months to like actually see any form of result. So mm-hmm. I just suffered yeah. for like a month, and then it felt like it gave me a bit of clarity. Like it doesn't cure anything, sure. obviously, but like I feel like it tampers down my symptoms enough that I can function.
Yeah, right. Have like it's just about quality of life. But so yeah. but so those like the brain fog and the morning sickness, like yeah. that eventually passed.
It eventually passed. It took like a month to pass. Okay. I still like the brain fog. I'm sure if I had my dose went up, it would come back. But sure. like my body's like settled on like the dose that I'm on.
Mm-hmm.
But the nausea, like I have to eat it with food, and then right. like I have to like take it right before bed, and then like if I don't do those things, like I'll be super nauseous. So like I have to be like really careful about that. But like other than that, I don't think I have many side effects from it that like last.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which is good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's, I mean, like the list of side effects for a lot of those medications are like, you know, they're one of the things that I think keep people from going down that route.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, oh fuck, like I'm going to take this. It's going to make me, it's going to give me brain fog. It's going to tank my fucking like libido. It's going to make it's going to change who I am. And which I get, I totally get, but also it, you know, if you can get to a point where you can take it and it doesn't do all of that. And it like,
and pharmaceuticals just seem to have like, wildly different, wildly different effects, including for a lot of people, no effect. No benefit is what.
But have you ever tried an iron supplement and like and getting that meditation? Nose fixed or what?
Yeah, meditate too. That'll fix it.
You're just around too many Wi-Fi signals.
The conversation about medication is really interesting. I was talking to a friend the other day who has been trying to come off of medication, and his goal. I was asking him. I was like, "What is your goal of coming off medication?" And he was like, "I just want to feel better." And his doctor was suggesting like maybe instead of coming off medication entirely, he needs to go on a new medication. And he's like, I just really don't want to do that. I just want to be done with these meds. And I was like, what is your goal? Like, what is your ultimate goal? And he's like, I just want to feel better. Like, so what if taking a different pill that can help make you feel better than you feel now works?
And the meds, I mean, you know, not to like get into it, but the meds he's taking now are like,
they're really bad.
They're really not good. Like they're just... They're really intense meds.
They're objectively like, not good.
And no one should be on them for...
To clarify, they're not meant to be on
long-term. No, they're not meant to be on like for a long period of time.
Like some other medications are meant to be on.
Like long-term. Zoloft, I think. You know, it's one of those meds where it's like, you can take Zoloft for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like... Well, I mean, in terms of like where you are now, you know, you missed out on the best summer of your life. But there's probably better summers ahead. And so like where, 100%. You know, where are you now in terms of like your, you know, managing the illness? How do you relate to it now? Like after having, cause again, like you're quite young. It's like, we're talking about the period of the time of, you know, 13, you start to notice this, which is fucking trippy. Cause you're saying you listen to the podcast from like almost day one. I mean, that's like
14.
You're 14 at that point. Like, it's been the podcast.
Holy shit.
Been around. No, like,
that I think I was 15, but
14, 15, sure. But, so, I mean, quite a you know, quite a length of time.
Yeah. That's actually, that's that makes me feel weird.
I know. And so this sort of trip into, you know, taking medication, it still is quite new.
It is, yeah.
And so, like, where does that leave you now? Like, how are you feeling about the present moment? And, like, how do you feel about what you have ahead of you?
I think I have a long way to go. Like, I don't know. I'm just in a place where it's, like, it's hard to access, like, care for mental health for, like, everyone. And I'm in, like, a weird kind of transition phase of my life. Like I'm on my parents' benefits, but like they're not always the best. Like I don't have like a full-time job or anything where like I can like, and I have no money because I'm a student who's in debt. So I can't afford to go see a psychologist. And like, I don't think that I currently am like, I think I can like be better, but I don't have like the access to the care I need now. I feel like I could probably try a bit harder, but it's hard. It's hard to get care. I feel like I'm on medication, but I feel like I don't have like a concrete diagnosis that's been given to me for anything. Like I would really like to sit down with a psychologist and have like a long-term sort of like therapeutic relationship and work on like a lot of my different stuff. Brian is gonna like this, but I also think that I might struggle with ADHD as well. Like there's just a lot of shit going on up here. Like I have a lot of neurodivergent people in my life, a lot of people with ADHD, and based off of their diagnoses and like the research I've done, like I have like a lot of things that align with it. So I don't know. I feel like I have a really long way to go, but I don't know. Just what I've done so far has made my quality of life.
And does SeaWorld have good benefits?
Probably terrible benefits.
Terrible benefits for the wildlife, but the humans are fucking.
I don't like SeaWorld.
No. Yeah, I don't think any of us do.
I wanted to ask. Like, is it? I mean, I guess I'm not sure if I'm having this realization now, or if this has been a bit of a theme throughout the podcast, not just this conversation, but like throughout us recording the podcast. Is like, do you feel a little bit like? People want to just like treat you enough to make you no longer quote unquote a problem to the healthcare system rather than like actually having the goal of making you enabling you to thrive?
Definitely. Yeah. I feel like where I am right now is kind of like where I've maxed out like the, I don't know, like the more accessible kind of options. Like I don't actively want to kill myself. So like it's not easy to like get into therapy.
Yeah.
Like
that's medicine 2.0, dude. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, it's good. Like here, like because you no longer want to end your life, this is good enough for now. You're going to have to just learn to live with this, you know, sort of like shittier situation rather than like, hey, let's really dig into this and spend time and inevitably money.
Yeah.
To like get you better. Yeah. That fucking sucks.
There's to give context to that. There's like this concept of medicine 2.0.
Where'd you hear about that?
No, I'm not even going to say it. I don't need to say it because it's not even because I know you
guys.
That's right.
You don't need to say it because everyone knows.
I don't need to say it. You guys know what I'm talking about. That basically like medicine 2.0 is like where we are in the world, where, like what we have and what we've had for a long time, which is just an outdated approach to medicine, which is treat it when it's a crisis. And if it's not a crisis, let it ride. And just only come in here when it's, when you are
on the brink. Yeah.
And if you're not on the brink, it's all good. And instead of let's never get you to the brink. Yeah. Let's make sure you never even get there.
Yeah.
And that's the next like phase of medicine that just at this current juncture seems extremely challenging. I don't know what the answer is. I'm reading a book. Hopefully it'll give me the answer. I'm not going to say what book it is. I'm not going to say what the author is.
You don't need to.
But hopefully we'll get there.
Before we get into the last two-part question, one thing that I just thought of about... I'm surprised that we didn't bring this up yet, but you know, you were talking about how when you were younger, you really kept this from everyone.
Yeah.
You masked it really well. But now you're sitting on a podcast talking to like thousands and thousands of people about it. So like, when did that shift? When did it start to change for you where you felt comfortable and like brave enough to like just be open about your mental health experiences?
Oof, it's definitely been like a transition that's happened. Mm-hmm. Like I would say in the past like 2 years. I think just more people talking about it has made me more comfortable.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, it's even taken me this long to get to this point. Like I said, I've listened to your podcast since the beginning and it's all about talking about how you're struggling. in whether physical, mental illness, but like it took me this long to be able to like even talk to my like family about it. But like, I think just everyone, like as kind of as a cultural, the sort of like cultural shift a little bit towards more people opening up. I think me kind of like having like a definitive crisis kind of helped. I also like when I had my like phone call with my doctor, I had to take it in the car because I like, I really needed to get on those meds. And like, I had to like pick up my boyfriend from somewhere. Otherwise he was going to be like stranded. But like, I had this like phone doctor's appointment. So I had to take this call with two of my boyfriend's coworkers in the car who were like people that I like kind of knew. So I had to go I just laid it all out. And these poor people, they were just sitting in the back seat, just like, and I was like, yeah, so I've been experiencing suicidal ideation for the past 3 months. So like, sitting in the front seat.
And you're going, you're like, I've been thinking about driving this car off the road.
Yeah, I was like, you're driving these
two. I wasn't driving, so that was a good thing. Only when I'm alone in the car.
Yeah,
right. Just a preface.
See, they're just going, oh, fuck.
No, but then like after that happened, one of them, they DM'd me on Instagram and they were like, hey, Claire, like I know that was like really hard to do. Like I've been like struggling with this as well.
Oh,
like just
sweet.
Like you're not alone type of thing. Like it was like good to like hear you kind of like open up about it. And like the more people that I talk to about it, like in my personal life, the more I open up about it, like they either just have a better understanding of what I'm going through.
Yeah.
It seems like, or there's like a connection that forms. Like they're like, oh, okay, so you understand how I feel.
Right.
So I don't know, they feel like they can open up to me a bit more about their own struggles. Yeah. So I think since I started opening up about it, like that was a really fucking awkward car ride, but like nothing bad happened.
Yeah.
Like I needed to do it. I got on meds and then someone like, I had like a vulnerable moment. I had like a personal connection because of it that was impactful to my life. And I think that's probably the moment where I didn't stop shutting up about it.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you say is the biggest thing that, that your experience with anxiety has taken away from you?
Definitely say like just being present in moments that I should have been enjoying. Like I said, like just that summer, like I don't know, I could have been having more fun and like just experiencing like, I don't know, like the good times in my life. Like, I don't know. Or like even just like when I'm home with my partner and my dog and we're just like all like sitting on the couch watching a movie or we're like eating dinner together. Like I think that me being constantly anxious has taken away from my ability to like appreciate how good my life actually is. Knocked my quality of life down a peg in terms of like my appreciation for things.
What would you say is the biggest thing that it's given you?
I think the biggest thing that it's given me is like a more open perspective. Like I think that because I've struggled with this, I have a little bit, I don't know, not to say that people who haven't struggled aren't capable of giving people who are struggling like space, but I think it helps me to sympathize or empathize with people who are struggling, even with things that are like different from me. Like, I work with kids. Like I was like an instructor in a summer camp and like, because of like all the people in my life who are neurodivergent and my own like mental health struggles, like when I see a kid who's like struggling kind of, instead of automatically being like, oh, they're an asshole. Like, why are they doing that? Like just kind of like sitting back and being like, okay, like, why are they acting like this? Like kind of like what are they struggling with that is causing them to kind of like, to exhibit these behaviors. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I think it has given me a bit more patience with people. And I think that's just benefited a lot of the relationships in my life and helped me form deeper connections with people.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I think there's something to what you said there that anybody and everybody should hear that and think about the ways in which they can relate to the struggles of other people, even when they haven't gone through that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because a hard thing is a hard thing is a hard thing. And even though the experiences aren't identical, like I got hit by a car and I spent a week in the hospital. It's like,
yeah.
Boom, all of a sudden I go, that makes me think about like Jer's experience in the hospital. Like I see that through a different
mm-hmm.
lens.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me experience not being able to walk around freely. So somebody with a whatever disability who has issues with walking or can't walk, you know, like all these different things.
Yeah.
Fuck, I saw this couple. This is totally kind of off topic, but I saw this couple and they were kind of walking and they were like, they were kind of like walking in an embrace in this like really sort of like way that, in a way that most of the time I would go, that's fucking weird. Why are you walking? Like, why are you walking down the street? Like wrapped around each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had this thought,
are they
like,
walk fucking?
No, they weren't. No. I'm familiar with walk fucking, but no, they weren't. And then I had this thought, like, man, who knows? They might have just got off the phone, and like one of their fucking parents might have just died. Like,
yeah.
I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I had that thought this morning, I think, and I was like, let's not. Everyone's waking up with something.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
You know? Claire, I just want to say too, like, I have such an admiration and an appreciation for people who come on to this podcast who have like anxiety in particular.
Yeah.
Who come on like,
yeah,
you know, like you're a young woman coming into this space with like 3 30-year-old guys to like share your like vulnerable life story with us. Like that takes a lot of guts. Yeah. And like
none of us are 30. We're not that young, but like
we're in our 30s.
Yeah, we're in our 30s.
but yeah, I have a huge respect for you for doing that, and no doubt like somebody's listening right now who is going through something very similar, and it's going to make a big difference for them to hear your story. So thank you.
That's good. Yeah. Thank you. That's why I wanted to come on. Just hoped it could help someone to hear.
It will.
Well, yeah, thank you. I think that's a good place to end things on. This has been really great, Claire. Thanks for coming on and diving into, why you're so mentally ill.
Give her a break,
just,
man.
She's just real loopy, isn't she? She's got a little loopy, a little nuts.
A little bit kooky.
Thank you, Claire. really, this has been really fun.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Well, there you go, folks. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. As always, we are coming at you Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And if you are a fan of the podcast and you want to support the podcast, there's a number of ways you can do that. First of all, you can leave a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. We love reading them. You can simply rate the podcast on the Spotify mobile app, if that's where you're listening. Or if you want to join the conversation, hop on over to our Discord. The link is in the show notes of this episode. And we have a lovely little community over there of sickos and non-sickos all hanging out, chatting. And hey, you could even help produce the podcast over there if you want. You can, again, find that link in the show notes below. Sick Boy Podcast is produced and co-hosted by myself, Jeremy Saunders, Taylor McGilvery, and Brian Stever. The show is managed by Jeffrey Lonis over at Talent Bureau. The sound design of this episode is brought to you by Donovan the CPAP Morgan. And, of course, the theme music is from the band Take Part. That is it for this week. I'm Jeremy, and this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.